Chapter 20, Earthly Paradise, May 1963, Mexico. I arrived in Mexico City loaded with if money, ready to activate our plans. Step one, I found a lawyer who specialized in handling the affairs of chemical companies. Step two, I met with a Dr. Carl Gerasi, Stanford biochemist, who gave me useful advice. Step three, my chemist and I spent several days visiting large pharmaceutical companies. My chemists knew their stuff, and they knocked the socks off the local drug experts. The factory owners were even more impressed with the forecasted profit of our proposals. As it turned out, our projections were extremely conservative, just a fraction of the $100 billion that the non-addictive Revelation recreation drugs would generate annually by 1982. The basic goal we kept repeating to everyone was responsible distribution. Only doctors trained at IFF centers could prescribe the new drugs, and only to our members. Our prudence was all the more virtuous since in 1963, psychedelic drugs were legal. Anyone could buy unlimited quantities of them. Mexico City, as a matter of fact, was ringed with American and Swiss pharmaceutical firms manufacturing all sorts of amphetamines and narcotic drugs. The owner of the Hotel Catalina, which we had leased for our research center, agreed to stay around long enough to teach me the operation, and then we'll be on our own for the summer. Within a few days, students and staff began arriving, and we started the training routine. One afternoon, as I was getting organized, a jeep raced into the compound, driven by the captain of the port. It seemed that I was being called on shortwave radio from Mexico City. Urgent, urgent. He drove me to his office, and there, crackling with static, came the voice of a Newsweek reporter saying that Richard Alpert and I had been fired by Harvard University. Did I have any comments? I said something brash to the effect that I was honored, and it couldn't have happened to two nicer guys. It happens to be against the rules of the Association of College Professors to fire a faculty member without a hearing. And although civil liberties groups and this association expressed a willingness to file suit against Harvard, hey, we didn't want to waste our time in litigation. I never wanted to be a professor anyway. The Harvard firing was very painful for me, for one reason, because of my mother. She claimed that it wasn't the disgrace of the firing that hurt her, but the fact that I hadn't told her myself, and she hadn't learned the news from neighbors. This distressing event marked the end of our 43-year-old friendship. My mom had always supported me in my escapades and rejoiced in my comebacks, but the Harvard firing and the scandals that followed just couldn't be explained away to her circle of retired Irish Catholic school teachers. During the last decade of her life, when the ladies gathered for tea to gossip about their families, no one ever mentioned the name of her son, the doctor. My concern with the Harvard firing was swept away anyway by the rapid influx of guests. Within a few days, we realized that, hey, we were developing the ultimate destination resort, Hotel Nirvana. We had doctors and lawyers and professors and writers, and no one wanted to leave. Folks who came down for a week or two started signing up for the whole summer. Meanwhile, the global publicity continued. Life magazine arranged to send a reporter and photographer down for July. CBS, NBC, and the BBC, as well as several European networks, planned stories on us. Everyone was interested because we were turning the world onto something brand new. See, at this point, we were well on our way to setting up a totally responsible social structure for the manufacture, distribution, and use of psychoactive drugs in a non-profit context. How naive. Today, when the American market for psychoactive drugs is the economic mainstay of at least 12 third world countries, and when the American law enforcement bureaucracies are fed more than $100 billion a year in tax funds to support their adventures, we can look back and see how Boy Scout naive and innocent our plans were. We were on the threshold of setting up a system for responsible, practical, non-profit distribution of these educational substances. At this point, we received a new variety of uninvited guests, two agents of the federal police. Buenos dias, comandantes. Jorge Garcia was a youngish, good-looking, and amused guy. The other was older and sour-faced, Juan Blisero. The two Federales sat down in our dining area and summoned me to a meeting. They didn't waste words. We were being closed down by the Federales. Why? Por qué? Why? Because we were besmirching the name of Mexico with all this bad publicity. Juan pulled out a Mexican newspaper. The headline, Harvard Drug Orgy Blamed for Decomposing Body. What decomposing body, I gasped. Hey, it turned out a corpse had been found a village 100 miles away. What does that have to do with us? Why, it's very clear, senor. The press blames you, and that sort of public scandal is intolerable. They showed me another newspaper article based upon reports from some people we had turned away. They accused us of marijuana orgies and hairy women and black magic and venereal disease and profiteering. Hey, I said, ask anyone here. Ask the staff. Ask the mayor. Ask the chief of police. Ask the governor. They know we're good people. No problem, doctor. We know that, said Jorge Garcia, the younger policeman. The real reason that you must go is that you have a tourist visa and are not authorized to run a business in Mexico.